What can our own lives teach us about the broader world? Author Nell Irvin Painter has long blended personal narrative with historical inquiry, and she collects some of this writing in the new book, I Just Keep Talking, A Life in Essays. Nell is an emerita professor of American history at Princeton University and the author of books including the New York Times bestseller, The History of White People, Sojourner Truth, A Life, A Symbol, and the National Book Critics Circle finalist, Old in Art School, A Memoir of Starting Over. Here she is to share five of her key insights.
Hello, dear readers. This is Nell Irvin Painter, a writer and visual artist with a unique personal history. I'm from Oakland, California, spent decades as a historian, and after leaving the Princeton University History Department, earned a BFA from Rutgers and an MFA from the Rhode Island School of Design, both in painting. In my youth, I lived for years in France and Ghana, experiences that opened my eyes to ways of understanding social and economic concerns not available to me had I stayed only in the United States. My writing and my visual art are further enriched by my intellectual history as a Black American born in the 20th century. I see and talk about race in America because race is a fundamental part of American identity. But that's not all I talk about here. The five insights of my book, I Just Keep Talking, grow out of my varied life experiences as well as my research. Let me share with you five of the key insights from my book. First, whiteness is a racial identity. Whiteness is a racial identity just as Blackness is a racial identity. Even though we tend to assume that white people are individuals, while racial identity applies primarily to people who aren't white. When I was writing my 2010 book, The History of White People, public discourse most often treated whiteness as an invisible default, not as a race shaped and often protected by history and society. It was unusual to see white people as people of a particular race with its own history. One example, the wonderfully rich Princeton University Library, where I did my research, has multiple shelves of books on race as Black, but hardly any books on race as white. Although commentary on race as white still lags behind commentary on race as Black, the virtual silence I encountered before 2010 on whiteness is no longer so dense. It's no longer widely assumed that white identity could be reduced to one of its worst aspects, white nationalism. It's so much more with its own history. What it means to see yourself as white has fundamentally changed in the time of Donald Trump. From unmarked default to racially marked, a change now widely visible from, of course, being president, and of course, being beauty queen, and of course, being the cute young people selling things in ads, to having to make space for other non-white people to fill those roles. Just as times have changed, I suggest with changing times, that we capitalize the W of white just as we capitalize the B of Black. Use the capital W to reveal whiteness not only as a crucial indicator of social position, but also as an important historical concept, one as crucial in American history as the concept of Blackness. After all, Blackness has not existed in a vacuum all by itself. It never existed in a vacuum. Now and over times past, the relationships between whiteness and Blackness have made all the difference in the world. My second key insight, biographical specificity is crucial to understanding people, even though it's tempting to see individuals as units of their social identity. People aren't interchangeable, even when they share important parts of their social identities, such as their race, gender, and class. Historical figures like Sojourner Truth and Ralph Waldo Emerson become even more interesting as we learn more about them, both in their own times and in our own times. I keep all that in mind as I talk about other people in biography and about myself in autobiography. My book begins with autobiography, with essays about my own history that situate me in my own times, discussing the relationships between my life and my work, between myself as a Black American and the people I discuss, Black and non-Black. The first autobiographical essay on affirmative action was initially published in the New York Times in 1981, but it could have been published yesterday. Prominent among those whose biographies I explore is the 19th century feminist abolitionist Sojourner Truth. Truth is widely associated with the phrase, "Aren't I or ain't I a woman?" A phrase that not only did she not utter, but a white woman journalist made it up 12 years after Truth spoke in Akron, Ohio. This brief phrase and the circumstances of its creation shortchange our understanding of Sojourner Truth, her identity as a New Yorker, her own fascinating life story, and her Black women abolitionist peers, women like the poet Frances Watkins Harper. If you know only the slogan, you may misidentify Sojourner Truth's regional origin. You may mistakenly assume that Sojourner Truth, a woman who had been enslaved, was from the South. She was not. My third key insight: history changes as the times we live in change. Contrary to what we too often think, history exists in two time frames, the past and the present. It's tempting to conclude that what happened in the past is over and done with, frozen in its moment and the lifetimes of its protagonist, utterly unchanging despite the passage of time. But when you think about how much happens in individual lives and the lives and peoples and nations, you realize that in order to make sense of what took place, to create coherent narrative, you need to select what is important from all the rest. At any given point, this selection takes place in the present, as we, the living, decide what's meaningful to us now. This means historical narrative changes over time. What we want to know about the past at one point in time differs from what we wanted to know at an earlier point, or, for that matter, what we will want to know in the future. We can see such changes clearly in American history. Compared with generations ago, we now ask different questions of the past, such as, who were the women and what were they doing? Before the Civil Rights Revolution of the 1960s, before Black people began widely to be seen as truly American people, American history was mostly the story of prominent white people who were men. We now ask for and find women and Black Americans as historical actors in ways that were rarely possible before the 21st century. New scholarship generated by second wave feminism in the 1960s and 1970s has changed how we think about gender, women and girls, and sexuality. This scholarship uncovers the meanings of personal violence and how violence affects people who live together. People who are linked as though in a family, even when they aren't related biologically and belong to different races, even when attachment means dislike. Recent scholarship has helped me understand how the violence so fundamental to slaveholding reverberated among everyone concerned, whether they were enslaved or were enslavers, whether they were Black or white or Native, and down the generations. My fourth key insight. You can reread history by bringing together unexpected contemporaries. Normally, we separate, we segregate people who lived in different regions and had contrasting social identities, such as two 19th century thinkers, the American novelist Sue Pettigrew King and the Viennese psychoanalyst Sigmund Freud, who were not in contact with one another, but who saw problems facing young women in similar ways, especially issues related to sexuality. King, looking at American Southerners, and Freud, looking at people in Vienna, revealed parallels in thinking about interactions between the sexes, whether or not race was part of the picture. Though we may think we know about the historical South, we can look again, through today's lenses, at what Harriet Jacobs, Hector Saint-Jean de Crèvecoeur, Thomas Jefferson, and Charles Dickens, perhaps seemingly disparate observers, had to say about how the mores of Southern society influenced American society as a whole. We see that those mores continued to make the South different from the rest of the U.S., especially in terms of the prevalence of personal violence. The views of 19th century observers are more likely to resonate with us since the rise of passion swirling around the figure of Donald Trump and anxieties around gun violence. If we can't put disparate observers in proximity, we miss how much they could see back then that helps us understand our own present times. My fifth key insight. Images enrich understanding of our worlds. In my book, images convey important meanings as well as delight the eye with color and composition. I Just Keep Talking contains scores of my own works of art produced in full color and large format on good, heavy paper. You can enjoy the images just for themselves, and you can follow my eye and hand into and beyond meanings conveyed in words. And images are central to my book. I'm glad that Doubleday has let my images appear throughout the text, each image living where it belongs. I hope you enjoy I Just Keep Talking, truly a life in essays. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Nell. That was Nell Irvin Painter with five big ideas from I Just Keep Talking, A Life in Essays. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.